far side. Here he is now, looking to maybe let the shot go. It's steered past the keeper, into the left-hand corner, and Tilly, cha-ching for him, he's doubled his money and registered his second, the Don's second this evening. Cross comes in from the left-hand side, it goes beyond Davison. Bougill on the edge of the box. Oh, it's a brilliant finish! Oi, Omar Bougill! Oh, what a finish! It's in towards McLean. Oh, he's found the second goal for the Dons. It's absolutely incredible. Oh, it's a brilliant save from Nick Zanev. Tipped it wide just when it was destined for the top right-hand corner. And it comes from Tilly in towards the edge of the six-yard box. Pell's going up. And now it is headed in. And it is Ryan Johnson. Pell leaping. Oh, and it's his first touch of the ball. And he's made it 2-0. Tilly, what a nonchalant bit of control as well, up against Milsom. Tilly now with a shot past the keeper. Oh, it's a superb goal.
Hi guys, it's Batty here.
Hi, I'm Omar Bougill.
Hi, I'm Terry Skiverton.
Hi, I'm Hussein Billah.
Hi, Bozo here.
Hello, I'm Johnny Jackson, and you are listening to the official AFC Wimbledon podcast.
Come on, you Dons.
Welcome everybody to the official AFC Wimbledon podcast as we react to the news that Johnny Jackson and Terry Skiverton have committed their futures to the Dons and will be remaining with us at the Cherry Red Records Stadium for the foreseeable future. Loads to come. Congratulations to them first off. We are going to be talking to Matt Haylock following the exciting news that the Spall kits are back. That's right, a brand new retro range is coming to the club shop. More from Matt in a moment. Then we talk to Josh Davidson about becoming a dad and his aspirations for 2024. We also talk foundation and what work the club are doing in and around Merton and Wimbledon. And finally, we sit down with Joe Lewis. That's right, our big signing in the January window, who tells us what it's like to be a Don once again. And this time, for keeps.
To be honest, I didn't imagine I'd enjoy it as much as I have. The last 6 or so months have really made it feel like home, to be honest. And like you said, I think people notice that.
Let's head straight into the body of this week's podcast and to the club shop at Plough Lane, where this week we received some very exciting news that a brand new retro range was upon us. That's right, the Spall kits are back. Let's talk to head of retail, Matt Haylock. Matt, really exciting news coming out of the club shop this week, the relaunch of the Spall kits. Tell us about the journey you've been on and what's gone on behind the scenes to bring these kits, these retro kits, back to life in 2024.
So we saw how successful our first, like what I would call proper retro shirt was. What was it, 18 months or so ago now, with the 94-95 shirt, the LNX one. I call it a proper one because it actually had, although it wasn't a kit manufacturer, it had the Crazy Gang logo on it, and because we own the rights to that logo as well. So we were able to put that on, and it's basically like an identical replica. Sometimes we get a lot of people offering to do us retro shirts, but they won't have the kit manufacturer on them. Umbro wouldn't like us doing that, but we're not actually going direct to Umbro at the moment. We're going through Kit Locker. So Kit Locker have been absolutely fantastic, and I have to say thank you to them, because when we were discussing it with them about doing retro kits, they said, you know, so what exactly are you talking about here, putting the AFC Wimbledon crest, you know, through a different kit manufacturer? And we said, no, it's actually the Wimbledon FC crest, which we've got the rights to. And he said, well, if it's a different crest, I don't really care, do what you want. So we will jump straight on it. And then the other problem you have is that brands like Spall, who aren't doing that much anymore, what they do is they'll sell their name. They'll sell the license to use their name. And we had a company phone. So I get offers all the time to do retro shirts. And my first question to them is, how are you going to get round, you know, using the logo of the manufacturer, the original manufacturer? And these guys came back and said, well, I know the guy, he's a mate of mine, and we've actually licensed the name of him, so we can put Spall on it as well. And I think definitely I've become a bit spoiled after we did that first one with the Crazy Gang logo on. I want every shirt that we do, retro shirt, to be perfect now. So as soon as I heard that you could use the Spall, then it was like, oh God, this is FA Cup final. And yeah, it was extremely exciting. And then we thought, all right, let's go big on this, because there's certain things that were never actually sold to fans at the time. For example, the walkout jacket that they wore onto the pitch when they met Princess Di on 14th of May 1988. And also the polo shirt that Don Howe wore on the day, and the physio Steve Allen wore. So we knew that we could give our fans something that they'd never had the chance to have before. So then it became really exciting. And it's a long old process. It's been well over a year. So now that it's actually here, it's kind of a big sigh of relief. And I just hope everyone's really happy with it.
There's a real appetite, though, isn't there, for retro bits nowadays? I mean, I was talking to Nick Robertson, director of the football club, and obviously, look, the governor at ASOS, and we were talking about it at the business club launch last week about how the want for sort of that casuals, that retro look, is just so in right now. So it's good that we're keeping up with the times, with the fashion.
It's not just with retro shirts either. I don't want to speak out of turn, but people can get pretty excited about a couple of bits that will be included in our training wear range next season, that will be worn by the first team and that we'll be selling in the shop as well, which have got a very kind of retro feel to them. Obviously, the walkout jackets we do at the moment are kind of retro, old style tracksuit top. But we've gone even further, and I haven't seen them in the flesh yet. I've seen the pictures, but they look incredible. But retro, yeah, I mean, I think I was talking to, I had a supplier in this morning, and we were chatting about why retro's so big, and it's kind of, are we harking back to a time when, I mean, I'm thinking back to when I was a kid, and you know, that people were kicking lumps out of each other on the football pitch, and we were kind of like, well, did we prefer football then? And he was using the term, you know, the game's gone soft, and that's why he loves the retro, because it reminds him of times when it was, when it was different. But I just think, definitely with us, we've got. I was saying to him as well, we're quite unique in this, in that it's an entirely different crest, and it is a completely detached, entirely different time when we were playing in the top flight, and you know, we were going up to Anfield and winning, going to Old Trafford and winning. So it's even more prevalent for us, and so that's why our fans are like, yeah, they jump all over it.
Isn't it amazing that there's a certain group of supporters who have never seen this football club play using that crest, but there's another group who are sat there throwing their checkbooks and cards at you because they're so excited to have it back?
Well, the funny thing was, one of the first replies on the when they tweeted it out about it yesterday was, please tell me you're going to do this in kid sizes. So I think the kids are going to get involved as well. And we are doing the walkout jacket and the FA Cup final shirt in kid sizes, although unfortunately, due to regulations, we can't have the Carlsberg sponsor on the front. But yeah, it was such a different, it was a different time, especially around the era that these shirts are from. You remember hearing some of the stories, like the guys going out drinking before the FA Cup final, Terry Gibson waking up naked in bed, apart from his brand new pair of boots on the morning of the Cup final, and then you go out and beat Liverpool. It's never going to happen again. It's the times have changed. That crazy gang, I don't think, you know, we'd end up with seven men on the pitch after about half an hour, I think, if we try to kind of properly recreate that. But it's happy memories. And I think you combine that with the pull of retro in general, then it's a winning combination.
So give us the lineup of what we're going to expect in the coming weeks, months with that retro line.
So as of when we're recording this, I have basically half the stock in. I'm hoping the other half comes in tomorrow, so we're able to launch this for Saturday's game against Barrow. So far, we've got half of the 1987-88 home league shirts in with Truman on the front. We have got all of the red and green away shirts from that season. We have the kids' walkout jackets from the FA Cup final, so all, and we have all of the polo shirts from the FA Cup final as well. So all we're waiting on tomorrow is the balance of the walkout jackets, the adult walkout jackets for the FA Cup final, and all of the FA Cup final shirts as well. So I'm keeping everything crossed that they're in tomorrow, and we can have a bumper day on Saturday. And believe it or not, I am working at the moment on the next retro release, which I'm hoping will be the back end of this year as well. So, and I think we're thinking that maybe this is just kind of a staple product that we have now, that we have a retro section on the website, a retro section in the shop, and this is something that we just keep, you know, when it gets low, we just top it up again and we keep going with it, and we just build and build and build the collection.
Matt, you never stop.
Why would I? I love it. Absolutely love it.
Next to the training ground, let's catch up with Josh Davidson, who talks about his ambitions for 2024.
Josh, good talking to you here at the training ground. Tell me what 2023 was like for you.
Yeah, it was a good year as a whole. Obviously, my daughter was born. Family life at home's good. The season, last season, didn't pan out as we wanted it to, the way it finished, which isn't ideal, but we've started off well. We're in a good position, kicking on to the new year in football terms, and looking forward to this year.
Tell me about this season for you. I mean, look, as a team, we feel like we're in a completely different place. Like, there's a buzz about the training ground. There's a buzz about everyone, a real good group of lads. What's it been like seeing sort of the transformation and being part of it and being right in the epicentre of it?
Yeah, we've got a good group. We got everyone in early during our pre-season tour, and that helped massively, like getting to know everyone early, kicking into the season straight off the back. And everyone's gelling, and it's showing on the pitch as well. Like, everyone's stepping up when they need to, and we're going to need to this month.
You have had to garner something this season which is very, very difficult for a footballer, and it's called patience. It must be difficult, but also, I mean, is it like with the goalkeepers union where you have this thing where you want other people to get better? I mean, you look at some like an Omar coming in and what he's done, and obviously look at the goals and assists of Ali have been crazy. But are you like that little union?
Yeah, like, we get on well. Omar, we get on well. His misses and my misses talk and things like that. Like, so off the pitch, on the pitch, you can only want the best for each other. And if they're doing the business, then I'm there to support them. If they need to come out, I need to be ready to go in. And you can't hold grudges and things like that. It's football. You're all trying to strive to make each other better. It's 11 players on the pitch. As much as you want to be the hero and the one that is doing the business, sometimes you've got to take a step back and wait for your moment. So
when you have done it, though, you have done said business.
Yeah, of course. Like, when I come in, I've got to show what I can do, whether that's to the manager, also myself, pride, just to come in and score goals and show that I'm still valuable to the team.
What's the dynamic like in there? I mean, everyone just seems to get along. I mean, we watch Luke Littler smash it at the PDC darts. You look like you're getting on well against some of the other lads.
Yeah, we're all getting on well. Like, all of the lads, we're a good group. We all talk. Like, there's a lot of like meetings outside of football as well, which in some clubs you don't get that at all, where you meet outside of football. It's just strictly teammates and stuff like that. So it's nice to be a part of.
No, Josh, tell me about your dart skills.
Oh, my dart skills. Oh, God damn. I hit the board, so that's a good start. Jono is probably the best. He's the best at darts. He brings the darts in as well. I just wait for him to come in and I start throwing them.
He looks like he'd do well in the pub with a pint. Just like sort of, not in a full pint, just, you know, like a half a glass, and it stays at half a pint all night. Yeah. And he's got a set of arrows in his hands. He looks like a very relaxed character.
Yeah, that's it. Jono, he'll nurse a drink. He won't be touched. He'll pretend he's drinking, but he'll stay sober. Let the others have a few, and then he'll show he's got the skill.
Tell me about the feeling of becoming a father.
That's a tough question. Can't really explain it. Like, when I was there, obviously, when my partner gave birth, and it's the best feeling I've ever had. I've ever experienced, like, someone comes into your world and you never know you could love someone so much, do you know what I mean? And when I held my daughter, done skin to skin straight off the back, and that's the best experience I've had in my life.
Alexander Mitrovic once told me that being a father changed him from that angry young man into the player he is today, and it really calmed him and made him mellow. How has it changed you?
Do you know what? I'd say off the pitch, I've got my own little family, and that takes away a lot of the stress, because sometimes in football, you go home, you can dwell on things, and things can play on your mind, and whether you've had a bad performance or you've had a loss, when you go home and you've got your little family, you can't take that when you go home. You need to be there, you need to be a dad. And I think that's what I've learned, is that I can go home and I've got kind of like a clean sheet to just wipe my mind and we go again.
Lacking sleep?
Do you know what? My missus has been doing the night shifts. She's been letting me sleep, so I've got to applaud her for that. And yeah, she's been letting me get on with it, so I haven't got a bad way.
Do you think that being a dad, being a family man now, do you think it changes footballers? I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson always used to use it as a tactic. He was always obsessed with players settling down and getting married and having kids, because he believed that it offered them stability and it offered them focus rather than temptations of going out and partying and doing what you do. Is it a good thing? Would you recommend it to some of the other lads?
Yeah, I'd say if you can find yourself a good woman and start your own little family, it puts you in a good spot because you've got a support system behind you. Like, my missus is my number one fan. She's my biggest support to me. And sometimes you need that. If you're by yourself, it's difficult football because it's a game of opinions. You get hammered a lot, whether that's in training, by your teammates, by managers, by coaches, by fans. It's good to have a support system to just remind you and pick you up when you're low. So I'd recommend it to all of my teammates.
So, on to more comical matters. You got a lot of attention because of your hair. The French plait to wear at one point this season. Very tightly tied. Who does that for you?
My missus. She's my hairdresser. Yeah. So, all the hairstyles, you can thank her for that.
But, I mean, although you grew the hair for a long time, there was a reason why.
Yeah, obviously I cut my hair for Little Princess Trust. And it's a charity I've known about for a while, probably 2-3 years. Since lockdown, I shaved my hair all off and I started growing it from scratch. And then after about a year of growing it, it got long. And I thought, do you know, instead of cutting it and calling it quits there, I was going to grow it, see how much I could get and donate it to a good cause, try raise a bit of money in the process. Because I weren't actually going to, I was just going to get a cut all off. But then my missus said, set up a page and try and get some donations for it and make it a good cause. And I did, hopefully help as much as I can.
How was it getting it all cut off?
Weird. I'm still not used to not being able to tie my hair up or do anything with it. It's just kind of floppy, but it's new.
Tell me about your aspirations for 2024 personally, because everyone knows that we want this team to win and we want this team to go and be successful in everything that we do. But what about you? What about Josh Davison personally?
Me personally? Well, my personal aspirations in football are pretty much for the team, because a promotion, that's what I want. I've not had a promotion yet in my career, and that's something that I think you need to experience as a player. That's what you want. You want to win. So I'd love to have a promotion under my belt. That's a personal one for me. Family life, just being there as much as I can for my daughter. I don't want to miss her growing up and things like that. So try and just be as present as I can, really.
What about 2024? If you were to sit and say, I'm going to manifest a certain energy and I'm going to manifest certain things and certain things will come true for me this year, what will it be?
I'd say goals. I like scoring goals. There's nothing better. And goals for me personally is always something I want to increase on. I wouldn't say my game's just that, but there's no better feeling as a striker. So I manifest goals.
You are a very harsh critic on yourself. I mean, watching you, if you're flagged offside or if you know you miss an opportunity, you can see it. You are beating yourself up.
Yeah, I'd say I'm probably up there with my biggest critic. Like, if I know my self standards, and if I feel I've not done as well as I am, then I reflect on it and I look at myself in the mirror, because you need to be accountable for yourself. That's the biggest thing for me. So just always trying to improve and do better. But I think sometimes I can be a bit less harsh on myself, because there's a healthy balance that I need to find.
But ultimately, are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm loving I'm loving just playing football. That's what you want to do at the end of the day, and it's obviously always sweeter when you're winning, so we need to try and keep that going.
Thanks to Josh, let's head straight back to the stadium, and it's time to learn more about the brilliant work of the AFC Wimbledon Foundation.
Yeah, we've had a great year last year. You know, we launched our 1,000 More campaign just towards the end of 2022, and yeah, really sort of trying to get our message across about what the foundation's all about. And what we do within our community. And it's basically embedding our three pillars and promoting that out around the stadium, around the community, and around the football club. And that's inspiring active lifestyles in local children, improving the lives of older people, and championing sustainable sports participation for women and girls. It's been a really, really good year.
Tell me about, I mean, expand on those pillars. Yeah. I'd love to know more. And, I mean, treat this as the opportunity to really pitch the foundation to people who maybe are learning about it for the first time. Maybe they're new supporters, maybe they're supporters in far-flung reaches of the world who don't really know what the foundation do. Tell us about the other side of day-to-day life here at Wimbledon.
Sure. Well, we're the official charity of this great football club. You know, everything we do is for the good of the club, for the good of the community, and for the good of our game. You know, talking about those pillars, as I mentioned, so I started here as head of fundraising about 2 years ago, and we've got an amazing team, about 15 staff and about 10 casuals who are doers. They get out there and they make things happen. And we work in over 30 schools, providing PE and after-school activity clubs. We do football every Saturday morning down on Wimbledon Park. We run a player development centre, which is picking up those kids who've got potentially the talent to go on to our amazing academy here. And it's not just about finding talent, it's about getting young kids from disadvantaged areas, the east of the borough, active, playing whatever sport they're interested in, just that they can improve their physical and mental health. The secondary pillar, improving the lives of older people, that's obviously extremely broad. We run walking football sessions here at Plough Lane, down in Tooting and various other areas in the borough. And that's for people of all ages, my age, up to about 60. And the final thing we look at, improving the lives of older people, and is our active ageing sessions that we run here at Plough Lane, and again out in the community as well, where we get people in and we play boccia, we have light-hearted quizzes and chats and so on. So it's basically using this Plough Lane as a hub, so we're bringing people in, keeping them active, keeping them social, and trying to create a greater sense of community cohesion as well. And the final one, on the back of the Lionesses, you know, the successes they had in the Euros and the World Cup as well, we're seeing more and more young girls getting involved in football now. It's not just for the boys. You know, we're breaking down those kind of barriers for girls to participate and those misconceptions. This last year, we recruited Nicole in, and she's our Women and Girls Development Officer, and she's increased the numbers by 80%. So we've got over 1,600 girls roughly engaged in our sports, and women and girls, I should say, engaged in our sporting activities throughout the year, which is incredible. It's just going from strength to strength.
22 years ago, three people were convinced that this part of London didn't actually need a football club and it didn't need community support. What you've just told me proves that it does.
100%. This club's built on community, you know, so we're giving back, especially being back here in Plough Lane. As I said, it's the hub. We want people to be coming in and out of this place, utilising the skill set that we've got here and our amazing coaches and the amazing brand that this badge that can attract. It turns heads. People want and get, you know, attracted, engaged by the badge, and we want them to just get active. Whether that's coming on to a walk and talk on a Saturday morning, playing football for the first time, or just doing anything, that's what this foundation is all about.
I work with different clubs, and I look at different clubs and their community projects. And with us, we're so intertwined in this part of London, it really does feel like home. But what challenges does the foundation face? Because, again, demographically, things are different in this part of London compared to up north, or on the coast, or here, there, wherever. Everywhere's different. Everyone's got sort of a unique story. But what challenges do we face here in Southwest London?
It's a really good question. I think, you know, first and foremost is there's a big misconception that Wimbledon, if you don't live in Wimbledon, you think you see the tennis, you see beautiful Wimbledon Common, you see a lot of affluent areas. What you don't see is Pollard's Hill, Mitcham, other parts of the areas which are, you know, extremely disadvantaged areas. And that, you know, from that is a big challenge, is trying to let people know that there are so many people out there that, you know, the cost of living crisis is really affecting, that if they want to get involved in sport, it's a luxury. It's not something that they can just, you know, send their kid along to pay the fees to join a local football club, for example. What we do is we allow those kids and adults to get involved for free through the funding that we get. Another challenge is funding. You know, we're competing for the pound. You know, we're a local charity. There are lots of other great causes in this area. And what we need in order to do more is what we call get that unrestricted grants and funding, so on and so forth, so we can try new things, test new things, and get more people active.
Do you feel that the football club and the foundation's efforts are well received by people in the local area? Do you feel that we're still trying to, not win people over, but remind people that we are here?
I think we always have to keep reminding people that we're here, you know. We are, you know, we've been back here for now 3 years, back at Plough Lane, but a lot of people still don't know we are back in the borough, you know. But we have, on a Saturday morning, we have almost 200 kids turn up. Their mums and dads are there. For over 15 years, they've been doing this. You know, it's part of their lives. We've got, you know, fathers who used to, or older siblings bringing their younger siblings down. It's a real family feel we have out there. But we can always do more. We can always do more. We can always collaborate more. As I said, we're the official charity of this football club. I believe we need to work more collaboratively. Even, you know, we work well together anyway, but we can do more to spread that great message. Looking at the badge at the top and how that filters down from people coming to their first game, coming to see what the foundation does in our family zone, engaging the whole family. Even with the women's games we've got here at Plough Lane as well, we run the family zone there. We've got lots of kids, lots of girls coming along to those, which I think as a collective, we could do so much more. And we are doing great things, but let's do a lot more.
It's about inspiring the next generation, but also bringing through the next generation of supporters as well.
Totally. And how do we go about that? It's through awareness and telling people, as you said, we are here, we are back. Our foundation is underneath the badge of AFC Wimbledon. You know, everyone who sees us out on Wimbledon Park, over in Wandsworth, whatever you see, the badge of AFC Wimbledon, and and it's strong. We've got a strong brand, we've got a strong connection, and I think once people come to Plough Lane for the first time and see what it's all about here, engage with the foundation, our activities, you know, we want them to enjoy it and come back for more and tell their friends.
This is Merton's Football Club, this is Wimbledon's Football Club. We wear that badge, that double-headed eagle, with a lot of pride, and it's something which you love to see when you're walking around the town, when you're walking around parts of South London and you see the Don's badge. It just fills you with such enormous pride, doesn't it?
100%. You know, and that's why when we see more and more kids wearing our kit at our sessions, you know, maybe 10 years ago, there would be a few other kits from various Premier League clubs that are in and around the area. But these days, we're seeing more and more boys and girls wearing our kit, turning heads, and it kicks off a conversation. The amount of times I've been wearing this badge and someone's going, "Oh, are you coming to the game tomorrow?" And I was like, "I actually work here." And then start talking about the foundation. It just triggers that. Everybody knows the double-headed eagle, and it does trigger conversations. From my point of view as a fundraiser, as a comms person, I just want to spread that message even further.
You've come very prepped to this chat, because I hate calling it an interview, it's a chat. Tell me about some of the stats, the numbers you've got, and the key messages.
Well, as I mentioned, the 1,000 More campaign we launched at the end of 2022. Well, we wanted to raise £100,000 last year, and we've just raised over £125,000, which is fantastic. You know, we've got new corporate partners involved. We've got over 36 people now giving monthly donations to us, which is around about £1,000 a month for us, which is so, so important, because that £1,000 a month means we can go out and test new products and press new activities and engage more people. We ran some really great events last year. We had a festival of football here at Plough Lane, just raising over £30,000. The Wombles Walk, which was, we had 70 people take on the 10K walk from Wimbledon Common back to Plough Lane, and that raised over £8,000. Don's Cycle Challenge we did this year. We went up to Leighton Orient. Again, that raised just under £10,000. So really great numbers. And these sponsored events and people giving monthly donations make such a difference to us. You know, other numbers we're really proud of. We're in 33 schools in Merton and Wandsworth. You know, we're engaging over nearly 2,000 children every week in sport activities, just in schools. That's not about what we're doing on Wimbledon Park and so on. Our holiday camps engage about 170 to 180 kids every day throughout the summer, Easter, all half terms and Christmas, which is amazing. You know, we've got an education schools program, which is over 40 kids, or students, are taking part in getting their MVQs and so on with Southfields College, but wearing the Wimbledon badge, competing in a league, which is the hook. Again, the badge has hooked these guys in so that they can go on and gain their further education. You know, we're really, really pleased with how the foundation's done this year, and we're looking forward to having another great year.
More on the foundation is available on the club's website. Also available online is a rerun of the Meet the Manager event, which took place on February the 8th. Go and check it out. Some really fun insight from Craig Cope, Johnny Jackson and Terry Skiverton. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the main event of the evening as we sit down with our new signing, well, kind of new signing, Joe Lewis. Joe, welcome home. And it may feel a bit weird saying that, but I think from an outsider's point of view and someone who just watches you play, this does feel like home for you.
Yeah, I'd agree. It doesn't feel weird really saying that. The last 6 or so months have really made it feel like home, to be honest. And like you said, I think people notice that. I've had plenty of people come up to me and tell me how they've noticed how much I enjoy being here. Whether that was people who knew me before or people who have met me since I arrived. So, yeah, it's not a weird thing to say.
Tell me about the last 8 months of your life, uprooting again. I mean, you've been from Swansea to Manchester, Manchester now down to South London. Tell me about the last 8 months of your life, what it's been like logistically, emotionally, having to adjust, change things up. Tell me about your world.
I'm definitely getting used to it, which... when I was younger, I never thought I would, really. It was most people from South Wales tend to be quite homebirdy and like to stay there. So the idea that I was going to be a professional footballer and potentially have to move around was always quite a difficult thing. Definitely getting used to it. But like you said, again, the summer was unexpected. I was still had a year left on my contract at Stockport and expected to be there when... the 22-23 season ended. I thought I was going to be there for this season. A few things changed in the summer. When I first found out, I was sort of, you know, you always take a couple of days to think about it. As soon as the idea had settled in, I was pretty much set that I was going to do it and was excited about it. I was excited about living somewhere new. I was excited about meeting a new group of people. But to be honest, I didn't imagine I'd enjoy it as much as I have. From the moment, I think I trained once before we went to Spain, so that was amazing for me. I was straight in, got to meet everyone, sort of in the deep end, really, in terms of from a social side of things. I didn't have any sort of time to bed in. You sort of just in there and you had to get to know everyone. And I loved it from the first minute. And since then, it has just been... just enjoyable. I've loved every second, really.
Who sold the club to you? Who sold the vision to you? Was it the gaffer? Was it Kobe? Was it a mix?
When I first arrived, my conversation with the gaffer was big. In terms of, and it wasn't so much, I had an idea about the club and a relative idea about how they were going to play, but I wanted to sort of see how that first chat went on a more personal level with, you know, whether I thought I'd enjoy working for him and stuff like that, which I did. It was probably a 20-25 minute chat. That's probably what sold the idea of, or at least I wanted to do it anyway, and then that sort of took it across the line. I was like, right, okay, I can play for this football club and probably, you know, I want to do it. And then from then on, everyone around the club has sold it to me because everyone's been so good to me. Made me feel welcome. Not just players and staff, but the fans. I haven't experienced a fan saying a bad word about me, and everyone that I meet wants to talk, wants to chat. It's very kind, not in a cliche sort of way, like genuinely, like people have been great to me, so that sold it as well.
Partnerships are a really important thing in football. There's that cliche, good cop, bad cop. Who are you and Jono?
I couldn't. I've got no idea. I hope we're unique, to be honest. I've heard the good cop, bad cop thing quite a lot. I'm not sure I agree with
who is the good cop, who's the bad cop?
I'm not sure there is a good cop and bad cop, to be honest. I think, do you know what, both have moments where, like, you know, I wouldn't give either of us those title either way, to be honest. We're different in plenty of ways, but also similar in many ways as well. And we definitely understand each other more so, even more so since we arrived here. But obviously we knew each other last season as well. So that was probably a good bedding in period. And then we arrived here, realised we were going to be playing with each other, and we're both so excited for it. I didn't know Jono was going to be here until the day I arrived to have that conversation with the gaffer. So that was a complete surprise. It was a surprise to him as well. But I mean, we absolutely love playing together. And that's not just saying that, like, we're great mates off the pitch, and it's an absolute pleasure to play with him on it.
I was just about to say, he is a lovely, lovely guy. I mean, genuinely, just a really good human being. But what is life like off the pitch with him? I mean, I remember Andy Cole and Dwight York talking about how they used to bond together, and when they did, and how successful it was for them. But what do you guys do? Do you hang out? Do you go for dinner? Do you go for lunch? Do you go for drinks? Are you coffee drinkers? Do you go for a walk? What do you do?
Probably the time when we spend most time together and have the most time to chat is when we're away, because we room together. And to honestly look forward to that every time we go.
Is he a snorer?
No, I might be, but he's never told me I am, so that's probably him just being nice. But I've been told by other people I am, so. But he's never brought it up with me.
What's the routine like? I mean, I find this rooming thing fascinating, and I know at other clubs they've kind of like got rid of it, they've done away with it. I think it's a really big part of team bonding, but what's it like? What's the routine like? Who likes to watch what? Who chooses what? How does it work?
Do you know what? We get there, we sit down, we chill, we have a chat, we'll go for food, and then we'll go back up and do exactly the same thing. The biggest thing is probably that we're both just comfortable sitting there, like doing our own thing. He completely understands me, and I understand him. So the whole time isn't spent doing stuff, and we're both quite relaxed in that sense. Like, well, by the time we've got to the hotel in the evening, I quite enjoy just sitting there doing nothing, and he understands that. He's relatively similar, so he does the same thing. Something will happen, we'll have a chat about it, and then, you know, might go half an hour without talking again. But a lot of the time, the people you get along with best are like the people you're comfortable to sit there in half an hour with silence with. I think that's a great sort of demonstrator of how well you get along with someone. Because if you don't, you know, you feel the need to chat and to make conversation because it's awkward, which don't have that with Jono, to be honest.
Are you TV watchers? Are you Netflix watchers?
Jono will usually watch something on his iPad. I'll sit there either scrolling through my phone or literally just lying there with my eyes closed. but Jono's always watching something on the iPad. If there's something we both want to watch on the TV, then we'll chuck that on. Or maybe if there's some sport on, we'll watch that. But there's no real, you know, there's no set way we do it.
I would love to be woken up to a cup of tea from Ryan Johnson in the morning. I actually would. Does he make the tea in the morning?
He doesn't, but you know what he has done a couple of times is we had an experience in a hotel a little while ago where we were really unlucky with our room and it was quite loud. And I woke up, the alarm went off for us in the morning to go down for breakfast, and I woke up and I looked at him. I was like, I can't go. I'm going to have to skip breakfast. It's a big deal for me because I'm a big eater. And those two meals before the game are massive for me. But I was like, I've not got to sleep until like 2 o'clock there. Like, I'm going to have to stay here. And he was like, right, okay. He went down for breakfast and he came back up with a couple of plates of food and a couple of drinks and put them down for me. He was like, there you go, mate. Like, you've got, you know, you can have some food now. And I'd managed to get my rest and get my breakfast in. He's just a great guy. So no, didn't make the tea, but he did sort of make me breakfast.
I love that. Yeah. I absolutely love that. Tell me about life outside of football for you in general. Is there a Mrs. Lewis? Do you have kids? Do you have a dog? Tell me about your family. Do they come up and watch you? What's life like outside, away from Plough Lane, outside of the training ground?
Yeah, family is huge and important to me. I love to see them as much as I can. And they're huge supporters. They love coming up. I have my grandparents in particular are just mad for it. My nan would go anywhere around the country. I think my granddad has to rein her in sometimes. We're like, look, we can't do this. But no, they're unbelievable. My auntie loves to come. My mum and my dad are massive supports for me. My sister. And yeah, I've got a girlfriend as well who obviously doesn't live with me, lives back home, is very close to where I'm from. So I travel to see her or she'll travel to see me. But yeah, family's a massive, massive deal. when I'm here, though, I'm quite happy to spend time with myself, quite happy to go for a coffee by myself. That is, you know, that's something that I don't really mind doing. It's the life of a footballer sometimes. Like I said before, the travelling means that you might be alone a fair bit of the time. So you get used to spending time by yourself. You get to learn to enjoy your own company. And then other than that, going for a coffee with the boys. Me and Connor were sort of massive on doing that, really. And have been for quite a long time. That's something, obviously, I enjoyed doing a lot before we left.
Is that your idea of downtime, going and having a coffee? What do you do to relax? Tell me what happens after a game for you. Because, I mean, you always put a shift in. You look knackered afterwards. How do you unwind?
After a game in particular, it will be food and TV. I'll try and switch off completely. After a night game, they're a nightmare. It's almost impossible to sleep after those. I don't know if you've had people tell you that before.
I think it's like that with any walk of life. You know, the sort of the adrenaline still pumping. So I can understand it can be hard. How do you combat that?
Completely trying to switch off, which is actually another big deal for me. When I'm not at the training ground, when I'm at the training ground, I think a lot of people would tell you that I'm very professional. And I spend a lot of time here. I'm probably the last to leave every day. And I've got no problem with that. I enjoy doing it. But it does mean when I'm not here, I almost don't think about football at all. It's just the way I am. A lot of lads will go home and will watch football in the evenings. I will, if there's something on that I want to watch enough, but I wouldn't put it on for the sake of it. That is my thing, probably trying to completely switch off from it. Because when I am here, I think I'm quite intense in that sense. In that I'm fully engrossed. So when I'm not here, I really do switch off. How do I do that? Reading.
So, would you like to read?
Non-fiction, really. About anything. Just, I don't know, the opportunity to learn about something. Nothing in particular, really. I quite like reading. I find it a good way to switch off. What else do I like to do? I like to watch other sport, actually. So rugby's been a big one for me at the moment.
Well, you are Welsh.
Well, exactly, you say that, yeah, but I probably haven't enjoyed that as much as people might expect. I played it as a kid, had to stop because of football, but I've been really getting into it lately. I enjoyed the World Cup a lot. I listened to a lot of podcasts about rugby, and I've been going to watch the Six Nations as well.
It's nothing like Wales during the Six Nations.
No, absolutely not. I actually haven't seen... I've seen Wales play at the Principality Stadium in Cardiff a couple of times, but never in a Six Nations game. I'll be going to that with my granddad because he's a massive rugby fan. There's something about rugby in the Welsh, I'm not really sure what it is. It's very different in a class sense as well in Wales. It is really a sport sort of enjoyed by everyone. I've been really sort of getting into that lately. I'm not sure exactly why, but...
You said you're a foodie. Do you cook?
Yeah, I do cook.
What's cooking it, Joe's?
Okay. I mean, I would literally have a go at anything. So I don't know. What would my speciality be? It sounds really boring, but a bolognese, but I will literally, honestly, anything, any cuisine, I'll give it a go. I am really boring sometimes, though. I'd say 50% of my meals during the week are chicken, rice and vegetables, but I think that's just the nature of the profession and the sport, really. I have to be a bit boring with it sometimes.
If you had to have a come dine with me, featuring any members of the first team squad, let's go for four members of the first team squad, who would you pick and why?
Is this because I think they'd be decent at it, or maybe I'll just spend in time with them? Okay, definitely Jono, because I think he'd put on a great night for everyone. It would probably be lovely.
He'd put a lot of effort into it, you know that.
Definitely. So him. Right, this is a big, big question. I'm going to go Armani, because he has cooked for me before, because we used to live together, and he is a decent cook. So him. So Jono, am I counted? Am I one of the four?
No, four guests. You and four guests.
Okay. Armani.
There's going to be a follow-up question, by the way.
JC, because I think he'd have no idea what he was doing, but it would be good. It would be fun to watch. And I'm going to go with Josh Newfield, because apparently he is horrendous at cooking, so at least I definitely wouldn't lose.
Apparently his brothers are really good cooks.
Really? I've heard stories about when he arrived not being able to boil pasta, so I'm not sure he's on that level with him.
Three courses. What are you cooking for the boys?
It'd have to be something I enjoyed eating. Not necessarily stuff I've tried before. Scallops to start. Really enjoy that. Maybe a risotto? Yeah. Like a mushroom risotto. Nice. And a dessert. cheesecake.
Love that. Who's your childhood hero?
Oh, I'm never prepared for these types of questions. So, Frank Lampard, John Terry, Drogba, because I did really like Chelsea as a child. But also, from the early days of watching Swansea when I was like 6, 7, and you know, when that age, you're that age, it's just magic, isn't it? Like, football is, you'll always romanticise football from when you're that age. So watching people like Lee Trundle.
What a player.
Yeah, just unbelievable. That really, I mean, the nostalgia from thinking about stuff like that is mad. But I would always have gone with people like, I'd say Lampard over everyone else, because I'm a midfielder when I was that age as well, so probably him.
Who do you model your game on?
Do you know what? I don't think there's a specific person. I don't think there is a person at all, to be honest. Not in an arrogant sense, just in a, you know, you want to try and pick the best of everyone, don't you? Really, and try and be as good at all those aspects as you can. So I'm not picking one person and saying, you know, trying to put myself in that box. Really, I want to try and be as good at all aspects of the game as I can be. So I'm just. That's probably what I'd model it on, is picking what I think I need to be good at and then trying to be good at it.
You're here with us for the foreseeable, and we absolutely love it. What would you like to achieve here? I know promotion is obvious, but what would you like to achieve here personally? When you walk away from this football club, because it will happen, there's always a natural end. I know we like to romanticise it as well and hope that you have a great career and you retire at 40, battle scarred and wounded and everything. But when you walk away from this football club and you leave and you go somewhere, what would you like your legacy to be here? What would you like people to remember you for?
I'm not sure I care about legacy that much. Especially in the sense when people talk about legacy, about after they die. I mean, once you're dead, I don't think it matters anymore, does it? So I'm not going to really care about that. What I would like to have done is, on a personal sense, enjoyed as much of it as I could have and have those memories for the rest of my life. It's a short career. And I think I really don't want to take for granted how lucky I am to be doing something that I really enjoy. So, look, I know there were going to be downs. There'll be bits that I don't enjoy. That's just the way it is. I'm not saying I need to enjoy every second of it. But if I kind of have a handful of really special memories from my time at the club, I think that'll be enough for me.
Finally, you know what's coming. Short shorts, does it annoy you?
No. It annoys a lot of other people, though. And I don't mind that.
Is it a superstition?
No. People will be fed up with me saying it. I started doing it, and it now feels weird to have long shorts. Which means I can't really do it. I think it would put me off if I could feel shorts sort of close to where my knees are. So it feels right. I've been having a good season. I've just sort of been doing what feels right to me at the time. That's why.
Beckham's hair, Cantona's collar, Lewis's shorts. Is this going to be like the trend summer 2024?
It could be. I mean, it's been done before, isn't it? This is why I'm always amazed that people have such a problem with it. Because in the 80s, shorts like that were the norm. Really, weren't they? Short shorts in football were the thing. And it always seems to be, you know, 40 to 50 year old football fans that this bugs the most. But it baffles me because they've seen this before. But I'm going to keep doing it. It doesn't bother me.
One more. Why 31?
Had it when I went back to Torquay. And now, to be honest, I think any other number with my name would look wrong. So probably stick with that forever now. And it's an easy one to get everywhere I go, because I don't really think people are that bothered about 31, so it's fine.
It's a great number.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you like it.
Love it.
Perfect.
Thanks to all of our guests on this edition of the podcast. There's plenty more to come. Do check out our social pages on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, YouTube as well. And go and check Matt out for those kits in the club shop. I cannot wait to see them. For now, though, here's Bezo.
Get every single episode of the official AFC Wimbledon podcast the minute it drops. Just head to Acast, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe. Come on, you dons.